Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So the big news here now, no jail time suggested for Michael Flynn. Evidently 19 interviews he's done. They've gotten some information. So prosecutors are saying no jail time. And I'll tell you, I don't know that I'm happy with that. I think you got to do something, even if it's the Papadopoulos 2 weeks. Something has to happen. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on this and, well, all of the other craziness going on. We've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come back and share some thoughts. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what do you think? No jail time? We okay with that?
Yeah, I think that's just, it's bullshit. I'm sorry. There's a limitation in how much time Flynn could ostensibly serve due to sentencing guidelines, but Mueller not only gave him no time, but went out of the way to praise him. And we need to keep in mind that Flynn was not some low-level player. He was not a little coffee boy. He was one of the most central figures in this entire probe. He likely committed treason. He committed illicit acts not only with Russia, but with Turkey. He was implicated in a long-term plot. He's lied under oath. I mean, he's done so many things. He has a very long list of crimes. And for him to just get nothing, you know, all it's going to do is embolden everybody in Trump's inner circle, who you may have noticed have been continuously committing crimes, since Trump was inaugurated. It didn't deter them in any way. The launch of the Mueller probe didn't deter them in any way. And people get excited. They're like, ooh, you know, they're committing more crimes because Mueller laid a trap and they walked in and they just, you know, can't help themselves. But when no one is actually punished for the crime, then it doesn't matter if they get caught. They're delighted about it. They love rubbing it in everyone's faces. And I think that's what Flynn will do, you know, and folks are on there. They think he's suffering. They think he's lost so much. Flynn was in St. Louis, where I lived, just a few months ago, like partying it up with the Phyllis Schlafly people. He got some kind of award from them. He's probably going to end up with like a Fox News show and a book deal and a cushy little life, because this is the establishment. The establishment is traitorous criminals. So, yeah, I think he should be in jail instead of profiting off of betraying his nation.
Yeah, he's going to be the new Ollie North.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the thing, is we have so many cases of major state crimes, you know, going back decades, for which people faced no consequences, whether it's Iran-Contra with Oliver North, whether it's Watergate, in which not everybody faced punishment for it, and those who didn't are often involved with the Trump campaign, whether it's going to war under false pretenses in Iraq, whether it's the financial scandal, you know, the same players show up, and more to the point, the justice system kept getting more and more corrupt, more and more lenient. It became much easier for people to buy their way out or use their influence to, you know, get out. And I've never seen, you know, a just system in my lifetime, and I've just seen it steadily erode. And when I criticize it, people think it's, you know, I'm going after Mueller. But, you know, Mueller is one person, and he's working within the confines of a system that's fundamentally broken and is being smashed to death even further by Trump and his sociopathic, mobbed-up administration.
So what do you say to the person, though, Sarah, who says, you know what, you needed this. You needed Flynn. He was the key player. It's like any mob trial. You're going to give immunity to, you know, some unsavory characters to go after and get the white whale.
Yeah, I mean, they needed Flynn. They did not need to praise Flynn. They did not need to give him no time. I think we need, you know, major reform within the system, because like I was saying, even if Mueller had wanted to do certain things in this case, there are regulations that were in place before him. But I don't think that that's anything to celebrate at all. That's just another indication of how broken the system is. And furthermore, every time that we've heard that Mueller has a cooperating witness, in the end, that has turned out not to be true. And I know I went on your show and I warned everybody about Manafort, and I said, you know, this guy is not actually cooperating. He did not actually flip. And that was correct. With Papadopoulos, he not only didn't flip, but impeded the investigation. It looks like Flynn did cooperate, or at least that's what they're saying now. But is that going to lead to anything? Like, are we going to actually see resignations or indictments of people above him? Because there are not that many people higher up the chain than Flynn. You're basically left with Trump, Pence, Jared and Ivanka, maybe a couple more. But, you know, there's only so far you can go with this. And we're running out of time because as, you know, Mueller is plodding along and, you know, finally sentencing Flynn, who was indicted, I think, last fall, like about a year ago, Trump has been consolidating power and stacking the courts with people like Kavanaugh, who will never indict a sitting president. And that situation wasn't in play a year ago. You know, maybe it would have been better to move things faster. Everyone says these things are impossible, but then I look at like Reality Winner, you know, who is in jail, who's sitting in jail for trying to expose the crimes that these people did. I look at people who I know who've gone to jail for things like speeding tickets or possession of marijuana. It is possible to jail people in America, not if you're Michael Flynn.
Poor people. We jail lots of poor people. There's a big industry to do that. But the well-connected,
not so
much.
We're not lacking in prisons, you know?
if we could get a parade, you know, to perp walk all these people down, you know, Pennsylvania Avenue, I'd be happy to build another prison just for them. But you know, I'm as this goes on, my hope, my faith, my faith in Mueller is starting to wane a little bit because I'm looking at this, I'm going, you know, nothing, and to praise him on top of that, 2 weeks for Papadopoulos, I'm going. Where are the people going away? I want to see people going, "Up, I screwed up, life sentence."
Yeah, or for there to be some consequences, or at least, you know, you would be able to see whether this investigation was actually acting as a deterrent in some way by people's behavior. But instead you have people like Papadopoulos, you know, bragging about his ability to con Mueller. You have the Trump administration, more boldened, you know, openly cozying up to Putin, openly cozying up to tyrants around the world. You have Manafort constantly committing crimes while in jail. You really have a strong indication that they could not care less about this investigation. And I think that's because they're relying on Trump to give out pardons, and they're relying on the Supreme Court, if anything goes to there, to set them free. And I don't think that that's a bad estimate. I think that that's actually what will happen. And it's unfortunate, but that's what happens when you have, you know, a consolidating autocracy that's, you know, at heart kleptocratic, where people's financial interests are at stake and where people are terrified of being prosecuted. They're going to do everything they can to make themselves immune and to personally enrich themselves. And that's very predictable. And so I don't really grasp why, you know, people on the Mueller team didn't see this all coming. I mean, they're obviously limited to some degree in what kind of actions they can carry out lawfully. But, you know, these crimes weren't hard to solve because everyone kept confessing to them repeatedly. You know, it was like, you know, wow, is Trump involved with Russia? And then Trump, like, goes and asks Putin for Hillary Clinton's emails, or he confesses to obstruction of justice on television, or Manafort can't convert Word into PDF and gets caught. I mean, it's, you know, some of it I do think is flaunting. Some of it is just sort of this incredibly blasé incompetence because they're really not too concerned about the ultimate outcome.
And that's the scary thing, not just on the federal level, but you dwell that down, drill that down to the state level. You look at what's going on in Wisconsin as we speak. You look at what's going on in Michigan, North Carolina, where, you know, the lame ducks are, you know, the Republicans are attempting to, you know, to steal power away from incoming Democrats. And again, this is kind of the MO. This is the Trump Republican Party.
Yeah, this is what I kept warning about before the elections, that they were going to try, you know, that they were trying to build a one-party state and that they were going to deem, election results illegitimate. I was worried that that would happen, like, en masse, like, everywhere in a more dramatic way. And thankfully, you know, I was wrong about that. But you're definitely seeing it on individual levels within different states, people just trying to strip away the power from the party that people elected. So, you know, what you end up with is not just no representative government, but a government that's putting in, procedures and protocols to prevent, the party that people have chosen from wielding any effective power in the future. And it's really grotesque, and it's going to keep getting worse. There's going to be more disenfranchisement unless people are held accountable. But, you know, that's what's missing from American life is any accountable for the powerful, particularly people, either within or working with the Trump administration and the GOP.
Yeah, I mean, and as you're talking, I'm thinking about there was a story here in Pennsylvania about a year ago of a guy who stole 3 peppermint patties and sat in jail for over 500 days because they deemed him to have some kind of mental illness and they couldn't find a place for him. So they jailed him for, almost a year and a half for 3 peppermint patties. You had a guy who commits, in your estimation and in mine, treasonous acts, kind words and no sentence.
Yeah, and it's incredibly frustrating because what I'm seeing on Twitter, and, this reaction is almost entirely from white people and, what seems to be upper class white people, is people saying, well, that's just the way it is. That's just the system. As if that wasn't the problem. Like, the problem is that that's the system. The problem is that someone will go to jail for, minor shoplifting or for, victimless crimes or for, really mild incursions or even go to jail for while they're waiting to be charged with a crime. Like, in St. Louis, you'll have people who will sit in horrible conditions for months before they're even charged. And then you have Flynn, committing some of the most serious crimes that one can commit. I mean, all sorts of things like financial violations and, lying under oath and treason and collusion. And I mean, it just goes on and on with multiple countries, with multiple criminal entities and doing it ultimately to help put a criminal in the highest level of executive power. I mean, it's so incredibly bad. And they're just like, no, well, he was helpful, so we'll let him walk. It's like, what the hell is next? Like, I'm envisioning the situation where Trump goes and actually does shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and then, helpfully gives some responses as to why he did it and cooperates with the investigation. They're like, oh, yeah, man, we're cool. And it's so gross. Like, the system is the problem. It's not just about Mueller, and it's not just about Flynn. It's this entire, mechanism of injustice. And the fact that people seem to just be cool with that and kind of accept it as the way things are, it's just depressing as hell. I mean, sorry if I offended
you're right, because if it's not you, if it's not you being attacked by it, it seems to be okay. And what I find interesting as you were going on about people sitting in horrible conditions, I was thinking about Manafort sitting in jail, and evidently his jail conditions must be so good that he didn't even want to go to court. He didn't want to leave the confines of the comfort of his jail cell to go defend himself in court.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, he has a somewhat cushy situation, but I think there may be some embarrassment with him about being seen in public, lacking his ostrich New Kids on the Block jacket and his hair grease and whatnot. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, there is that. But I did want to ask you on a different topic. I had a couple of listeners reach out and say that, are you following what's going on with Sarah? And I hadn't been until I went and I looked at it. What's going on with you and the correspondent? What's going on with evidently they've taken your articles down?
They did. Well, first, I haven't worked for them in about a year. I stopped working for them in January after a change in editorial management, where they replaced the editor I had worked with, who was wonderful, with somebody who just didn't seem to understand basic facts about American government or society in general. For example, they didn't believe voter suppression was real. They didn't believe climate change was real. But when I'm writing articles about these things, obviously there's going to be a conflict. And so I said, okay, you guys are working on your lunch. I've got lots of stuff going on. Why don't we regroup, maybe talk again later in the year once, you all figure out what you're doing. And there's more to this. There's some, very seedy things I discovered in the interim that made me privately think, well, this is not an organization I want to be working for in any capacity in the future. But I kept quiet about it. until they did delete all my articles. One of their computer technicians told me that it was, in fact, a deletion. Once I notified them, though, they quickly got them back. They're probably back about 4 hours later. And, you know, folks were like, don't you back up your stuff? And I'm like, yeah, you know, of course I do. I have this all on my computer. That doesn't help people that use my work, that read my work. And the thing with those articles that I wrote for De Correspondent is they're among the most shared articles that I've written. You know, they often appear on college syllabi. They inspired a lot of activist groups. You know, people are always quoting them back to me when I go and give talks. And so, you know, obviously I didn't want them gone, not just for me, but for my readership. And, you know, of course, because I'd worked hard on them. And it was very baffling to have all my work suddenly disappear, not just from the site, but from Google. There is some sort of mechanism in play where, you know, you couldn't even get the cached versions, you know, and I have some questions about that. But, you know, the point is that they are back. I think they are going to stay there for, you know, the future. And so, you know, that part's good.
Okay, because, you know, like I said, I had a couple of people who were reaching out going, you know, what's going on? You know, they had seen, you know, some of the Twitter stuff, and I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to ask. Because, you know, there were a couple of articles, there was some real seedy stuff going on. Like they were, you know, I guess you haven't been working for them for a while, where they're raising money off of you without even you knowing about it.
Yeah, I had no idea. They'd been using my name and my work, like unbeknownst to me, because it was in Dutch, which I don't speak, and telling people they were building an editorial staff around me, telling people that I was, you know, the American they found and I was the focal point of their effort. I had absolutely no idea this was going on. I mean, you know, this is one of many places that I write for, or I wrote for. You know, throughout 2017, I was writing for them. I was writing for Globe and Mail. I was writing for Fast Company. I was writing for NBC News. I was, you know, I had a book come out. Like, I had all sorts of things going on. And so I thought, okay, you know, I'm a contributor, and I certainly enjoyed working with them under the original editorial lineup. But yeah, I had no idea any of that was happening. So, you know, one thing that really did offend me is that, you know, after they restored my articles, they sent out this kind of nasty press release about me where they said that the reason, that, you know, that we parted ways, you know, which they did not make out to be mutual, although it was, and, you know, honestly, it was, you know, I initiated it, was because of differences in proper sourcing, kind of implying that I don't, you know, have proper sourcing in my articles. No one has ever accused me of that. You know, I have a PhD. I was trained as an academic. If anything, I, you know, overcompensate in terms of putting sources. I've never had to make a major correction for any of my articles over my entire career. And that was not it. I mean, it was a very fundamental difference. It was a, you know, a bit of a personality dispute in that, you know, the new person was very insulting, somewhat misogynist, and they had agreed to pay me for that final article because they agreed that there's nothing wrong with the content of the article other than, you know, my belief that, say, voter suppression exists. I had to really wrestle with them to get my final article for them out, which led with, of all things, the possibility of voter suppression in Georgia in 2018. I wrote that in November 2017. They did not want to run that. They did not want to go anywhere with that. They thought I was just making that up. And, of course, we now see what happened with Stacey Abrams and that state. And, of course, I was right. And they just, I mean, I can go on. You know, there are a lot of articles in Dutch about, you know, the racism within the organization, the lack of diversity, and, you know, maybe that was a contributing factor in the sort of refusal to accept voter suppression as an actual phenomenon. But yeah, you know, I still haven't gotten paid for that last one. At this point, I received, like, such an enormous amount of harassment that I'm just, like, not really bothering. I've got other stuff going on, and, you know, hopefully they'll change their ways. Hopefully they'll put out, you know, quality content, you know, actually hire decent people. But, yeah, I mean, it was weird just because I hadn't been involved with them in, like, 11 months. And so to suddenly see this was, like, very jarring, you know, and to find out from my readers, like, hey, I'm trying to get my work, you know, this was assigned to me in class. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, I had no clue. And I guess they had... Well, they claimed to have no clue, but their technician told me they did. So that's shady.
No, I mean, you know, the whole disjointed, you know, media structure that we have, to where you have to deal with CD outfits. You know, just I there's got to be a better way than what we're seeing right now.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's a mess. And, you know, the irony is they're kind of proclaiming to, you know, fix what is a broken media system in the U.S., and I really wish that that was what they're doing. But, you know, in addition to crowdfunding off me, you know, they've got millionaire backers. You know, they're out asking Americans for money, and I hope people don't get scammed. I had a lot of people write to me, and they were like, I thought that you worked for them, like, and that's why I gave them money, and you know, I want to know, are you? And if you're not, then I'm canceling. And I was like, yeah, you know, I haven't for a year. Like, my last article is in November 2017. And so that was my fault. I mean, I didn't want to make a big deal out of all this. So, you know, I was completely quiet and just let them run their campaign. But I probably should have come out earlier and said, you know, this is no longer an organization that I work for. And maybe we should have put out some sort of statement in tandem, you know, so that's on all of us. But it is unfortunate.
Yeah. Lesson learned. But again, you know, I think the more we wake up to the reality is, you know, journalism today isn't, you don't work for these different places. Everything's now freelance and independent contractor and pay by piece. And I would argue not a good scenario.
Oh yeah. I mean, I do that intentionally for like a number of reasons. You know, one is I live in St. Louis and a lot of these places have like a residency requirement. There's no goddamn way I'm living in some expensive East Coast or West Coast city. Like, I'd rather die. Like, that's misery to me. But also, because media is so unstable, you know, with editors quitting or places going under, like Mick or Mike or however you pronounce it, just went under, you never know who's going to be around. And so I sort of try to, you know, kind of be attached to a number of different organizations, work with a number of people at the same time, because the economy is so terrible for the media that I never know who's going to be there one day to the next. And, you know, that's often a beneficial thing. Like, I've had a lot of really great editors and a lot of good experiences every now and again. I have, you know, not the greatest one, but it was fun while it lasted.
So. Yeah, that's the whole media culture right there in a wrap up. Finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on this story that I found that I just had to chuckle at, because Steve Bannon, evidently his stock has fallen pretty far. I mean, he's had a...
You're going to have to explain this to me. If this is about the sex robots,
yes.
Like, I saw the headline and it's like I mentally like ran out of the room. Like, I don't even know.
How bad has his stock fallen that he was canceled speaking at a sex robot conference?
What was he doing? Oh, yeah, this is the thing. It's like, I feel like sex robot conference is like 100% where Steve Bannon should be speaking. Like, this is, you know, his level. I don't get why he was like invited by the New Yorker or like the, you know, Monk program in Canada. You know, sex robots, that makes sense to me. And then getting booted from the sex robot conference, like, that makes sense to me too. Like, if I were in that conference talking about sex robots, I also wouldn't want a, you know, white supremacist psychopath in my presence. So good for them. You know, good for the sex robot folks doing a better job than the New Yorker and others. But, yeah, I mean, Bannon, he's one of those guys, you know, in Kansas, he couldn't fill up, you know, a small venue there. He's not really someone who anyone actually likes, except for the media elites who cozy up to him a lot and refer to him as his intellectual leader. But I don't really see any indication that anyone feels that way about him. He's just kind of, you know, there. He's just like lurking about, and, you know, being dismissed by sex robots. So
yeah, there you go. If anything will end the sex robot trade, it could be Steve Bannon. There you
yeah.
go. There you go, Sarah. I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Keep up the great work. I look forward to talking to you again.
Oh, thank you.
As always, our good friend Sarah Kenzior. Great stuff. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. Creeping through the door. It's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement.